Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back. You're with Greenwashed. Just before the break, we were speaking with Caroline Ems from the Rainforest Reserve Australia, and she spoke about the massive betrayal that they are facing there. And for someone like Caroline, who spent a lifetime working in conservation, to be let down by those who you thought were your allies, you know, Don, NGOs like Greenpeace and others, you would think they'd all be up in arms about why is koala habitat being completely destroyed with these transmission lines and this massive infrastructure. But not a peep. Yeah, funny that.
Funny that not a peep from them. Perhaps they're in the pay of the big energy companies as well. Who knows? I shouldn't possibly perhaps even consider that, should I? But yeah, she's such a passionate advocate for the biodiversity in the region. What did she say? There's 79 species at risk of extinction, or, you know, at least having their habitat seriously altered in that area. And I think they're now down to what, about 39 that they can say they've lost some already. So yeah, it was sad when you see the numbers. They are mind-boggling for this infrastructure build in Australia. And as I mentioned in that interview, it just makes no sense to do it when, you know, there's other options. But, you know, they've got politicians playing the card they are. And, you know, we've had them in New Zealand too. Luckily, we're already at sort of 75%-ish renewable energy or more. So, we're different to Australia. But, no, she was fantastic, a great advocate. And if we all had her passion, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in today, I don't think.
No. And that's what it is. You know, towards the end, we spoke about how Apple is part of bringing in this massive renewable energy infrastructure into the parts of Australia and, of course, the rest of the world where they operate. And I think that's what I'm going to start this week's Climate Crazy with, because The Guardian occasionally puts out the truth. And this one that says data center emissions are probably 662% higher than big tech claims. So big tech has made some big claims about greenhouse gas emissions in recent years, but the rise of AI creates even bigger energy demands. According to a Guardian analysis, over a couple of years, the real emissions from the in-house data centers of Google, Microsoft, Meta, and Apple are probably 662% or 7.62 times higher than officially reported. And is that why you're seeing all of these companies now wanting renewables to make sure they do good, at least with creative accounting on their net zero claims?
Yep, that's it. And of course, outfits like some of the ones you just mentioned are struggling to meet their 2030 commitments by many factors over. So they are trying to appear to be buying their electricity from the most renewable sources, including New Zealand, if they build data centers here. So look, it just shows you again, this whole machinery of climate change has built so many
perverse incentives.
Seems nonsensical that New Zealand should be tying itself up in knots, trying to think how we can do our next our transition to something better. But we're actually going to be building data centers or offsetting for the big players in the world, offsetting their emissions somewhere else. It's nonsense.
It is nonsense. And RNZ reported in a similar vein. This is from the 24th of September, saying that energy-hungry data centers want New Zealand's renewable energy to reduce climate impact, at least on paper. Mm. If they destroy a few habitats, if a few koalas are lost, if pristine mountain ranges are, pockmarked by these industrial sites, as Caroline spoke about, well, do they care? Not really. But meanwhile, if you're a farmer, you literally are at the stage where to pick up a shovel, you need a resource consent. But somehow, all of this seems to go via central planning, fast track, and so on. Communities don't really have a say.
And one of the Northern Territory over there, I think they're putting in a solar panel area. Don't like calling them farms. I think it's 12,000 hectares, and it's going to be pretty much piped through massive cables to Singapore.
What?
What the heck? It just makes no sense. 4,000 kilometers of mainly underwater cabling. The cost of that would be mammoth, but there you go. And so when you look at some of the data coming out of Australia, the size of the renewable projects for wind and solar will cover an area, the ones that are on the books, there's hundreds of them, will cover an area as large as South Australia. We just don't need that. And as we talk about toward the end of that interview, Carolyn actually is warm to the thought of nuclear to be an option. And all this build up and build out that's going on right now would just be diminished.
Because, you know, it's time to call things out for what they are. We've had enough of this bashing of farming, and pretty much everyone, you know, when you were told in summer, don't water this and don't do that. Meanwhile, at this time, ChatGPT-4, if you are to believe reports, they say to generate 100 words, it consumes 1,408 mils, which is 3 bottles of water if you are doing the 500 mil ones. Mm. Yeah, everything needs resources. We all use the earth, as Dawn has taught me. We all use the earth and its resources, regardless of whether you're farming, you're fishing, you're building a house, you're in a software industry, everywhere. So time to get rid of that holier than thou attitude here.
Yeah, and so I've changed my way of talking about it a little bit. And I learned this from Margaret Byfield, who we will have on next week. She talks about the monetization of natural assets. And that's what we all do. That's what every one of us sitting and listening to this right now is doing. We've all benefited from the use of the natural assets, and we've all monetized it. So as consumers, there's nothing that lets you off the hook. Nothing. That's why I go back to my first point, which is using those resources wisely. And you know, if we have to recycle resources, that's great.
100%.
And we do. Anyway, look, there's other crazy stuff going on. Look, what was that Silicon Valley? those couple of chaps there doing some weird stuff. They're actually selling cooling credits.
Let me read this out from the New York Times for our listeners.
I can't say that with a straight face. Can you?
I'll try, Don. I'm on notice here. So, the article from the New York Times, they talk about this a company called Make Sunsets. Make Sunsets is one of the most unusual startups in the region, brimming with wild ideas. Mr. Isman, 41, and his co-founder, Andrew Song, 38, claim that by releasing sulfur dioxide into the stratosphere, they can reflect back some of the sun energy back into space, thereby cooling the planet. So a few times each month, the pair, after selling enough cooling credits to customers who want to offset their personal emissions, they head for the hills and they release balloons full of sulfur dioxide into the vast California sky. How amazing these people are.
Well, base level geoengineering and really entrepreneurial. What an opportunity.
I can't believe there are people who will buy these cooling credits. Well, and they think, I mean, the visual that goes with this New York Times article, the two guys with their van in the background, and I see they are wearing full respirators, Don, masks, while they are doing this. So how safe is what they are releasing, the sulfur dioxide? But there they are with their tanks, filling up these balloons, releasing them. And you can go and, I don't know, have another bean and falafel tofu wrap or something, vegan, of course, and feel virtuous.
Sulfur dioxide. Does seem a bit odd to put sulfur dioxide up there. I thought they used silver, something or other, when the real geoengineering happens. but I've got the plan. I've got the better plan. So this will be totally recyclable and totally, it'll be energy efficient. And that is that we put an ice cube maker on an iceberg. So you imagine, all we've got to do is cart them a bit of water and just make the ice cubes on those icebergs. They will instantly freeze and it'll just be done. Do you think that's going to have some merit? I'm thinking like these guys. I'm thinking there's got to be a bit of merit and there's some money in it for me. What do you reckon?
Well, there are some of those who are trying it. The New Scientist reports plans to refreeze Arctic ice has shown promise in the first tests. Field trials indicate that pumping seawater onto the snow on top of the Arctic sea ice can make it thicker, offering a possible way to preserve sea ice throughout the summer. It is summer. Ice is supposed to melt. Why do we want to preserve it during the summer? Why do you want to mess with nature so much? There must be some dollars involved on.
Oh, I think we could make that. What's the word? So that it's ever, so you siphon the water up. You don't need a pump. It just siphons and you refreeze it on top. I mean, it's the ultimate perpetual motion sort of ice maker. I think I'm onto something here. I think I'm onto it.
Well, these guys certainly are. There must be grants for all of this. Everything with the say is going to save the world from sea level rise, you know. Guterres can fund them some money.
He absolutely can. So we've got plenty of others in here. What else can we choose? There's such a listeners, Jasper sends me a dossier of these things, and we have to sort of select them.
Well, the latest reports from the UN and others, it states that the rich countries could raise $5 trillion, $5 trillion of climate finance a year. And this could help the poorer countries to somehow sort out their emissions, save them from rising sea levels, stop themselves from drowning and all of that. Now, I don't know about you, but if anyone of our listeners thinks New Zealand is particularly flush with cash right now, we'd love to hear from you, Don and I, because not far from us, this weekend just gone, there was a massive protest in Dunedin. Thousands, tens of thousands of people, if you believe the media, 35,000 people marching on the streets because of the cuts being proposed on the Dunedin Hospital, because we simply cannot afford it. And yet, at the same time, the spin-off is saying New Zealand isn't doing enough to fund climate action. And this is how we know, of course, there's Guterres being reported and this meeting that they had last month when Antonio Guterres stopped in New Zealand, the UN Secretary General. They are saying that our $325 million contribution, our pledge, is not nearly enough if we look at other countries of a similar size, and we should be heading closer to about $1 billion a year.
Yeah, that is just chump change. I mean, we just spill that sort of money, don't we? And you know, changing back to the Dunedin Hospital, it's been talked around about for well over 10, 15 years now. It's like a political football. And it does seem that there's a bit of gaming going on. But the question for me is, it's a regional hospital. It gets a lot of patients from our area and further inland. They're flowing there, or you have to drive there for your treatments. So look, we don't need that hospital to be downsized. So I'm on side with that. We need it to be right-sized. But it does seem that the price they're talking is outlandish. Outlandish. And so who assesses the value?
Well, in this case, who is assessing the value, who's telling us we need to pay more, is Dr. Olivia Yates. She is in the University of Auckland. She describes herself as a Pākehā and Pelagi community psychologist of Irish, English, and Scottish ancestry. And her research is in a BSc and a PhD in biological sciences and a BSc honors in psychology. And she's telling us we are not paying nearly enough here because we need to go back right from colonization and the impact of deforestation that was caused by colonization of New Zealand. And if we look at what we should be paying, it should be well over $1 billion.
Yes.
But she's hopeful that this year's COP29 will be given a new bill. And New Zealand being New Zealand will just jump up the change.
Well, I hope we don't get given the bill for that. Was it the nationally determined contributions? We're on the books. We've got liabilities up to, what is it, 30 billion or something? Mm-hmm. Is it 23 or 30 billion somewhere? Here I am talking like it's just sixpence. These people, they just, I hate using the term the value proposition, but we're getting further and further away from reality every day on this sort of stuff. I don't get it.
Well, let's go to a lighter
I'm not going back 150, 175 years to worry about colonization. That's for real. We've got to put a line in the sand and say, stop this nonsense. You're all living here today. You're all had the benefit of a modern society, behave yourself. Get back in your corner.
You have no white guilt, John?
No white kids.
No white guilt?
Well, I absolutely none. And
thank goodness for that.
Nor does my wife, who's a very small part Maori. We just don't have it. We're all equal under our eyes, everyone.
100%. Sorry, and that's all of this is just, you know, you see some of the stuff that's being fed to our children in schools. I mean, not even in schools, in universities now. And what is happening, what we see around us is just the result of us taking our hands off the wheel, just going along with this, saying, oh, it's too uncomfortable to rock the boat, or she'll be all right. Mm. Well, she ain't going to be all right until we decide that we got to do something to make it all right. But
yeah.
From white guilt to lighter topics now.
Yeah, look, I expect to be bashed around in the feedback. That silly old white guy. And here I am labeling myself a white guy. I think that's nonsense in itself. I should not 100%. Use that term. I'm just a person.
Yeah. RNZ reported 3-4 days ago, a Wellington woman says that a city's new cycle lanes are opening up a world of possibilities of what can be achieved without motor vehicles. Last weekend, Beth Walker, an executive assistant and researcher in Green MP Julianne Genta's office, moved into her new flat with the help of a collection of cargo bikes and a little elbow grease from like-minded friends and volunteers. Well, that bit, Beth Walker, executive assistant and researcher in Green MP Julianne Genta's office, that's all you need to know from this one. I don't know. I think she is a single, going by what I see on the social media, but of course, you know, not everyone shares everything about their lives there. I don't think my household could really move on these cargo bikes, Don. Yours certainly cannot. I know your garage. No,
it certainly cannot. But what was unamusing to me in that whole, and I read two articles on that, is that the people in their cargo bikes were all men. And there were seven of them. It was totally sexist. And I couldn't believe it. There was no one picking up the there was a set of drawers and stuff. They were all men. What the hell does that signify? That men are stronger or more, you know, they're subservient? I just didn't get it. I thought it was completely oddball for the Green Party to have such people in them. Yeah, that'd be all-inclusive.
I don't know whether you are serious or you're speaking jest, Don. But yes, this is ridiculous. This is what our media has become. And they wonder why readership is failing, why there's alternative channels, why people, why the trust in the Fourth Estate is down in the gurgler. This is why it is.
Well, it gets worse in this article. The bollards going along the cycle lane were being hit by the queen-size bed that was being carted. And so the cycle lane manager of Wellington City said it's something they will look at. What a frickin' tosser. A person carts a queen-size bed on a cycle lane and the cycle lane manager of Wellington wants to do something about it.
Oh, my God.
Doesn't it fix it? Look, it just puts them all in the same box to me. All crazies. We're in the right place. Climate crazies. Here we go.
I need a second.
You thought I was grumpy today.
I was building up to
that all day.
I seriously need to compose myself here and come up with something serious after all of this.
Well, another Wellington story. NIWA and the Met Service merging. That's useful. Yeah, we might get a common story out of them.
A single source of truth, climate truth there. That's what comes to mind.
But I still like the idea that having Weather Watch and Philip Duncan, who's on our shows, on our station, his independence is vital as well. So,
yep.
Good.
Really,
but we don't
really
need
good.
Two taxpayer-funded ones having different opinions. Or maybe we do.
Ian Wishart speak about NIWA and the failings he's seen there. Will that same attitude rub off on Weather Watch? Yeah.
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of, you know, the, the minister, Judith Collins, was not very happy with some comments when she was being interviewed by Paul Brennan. But, you know, maybe that was the catalyst for this happening. Yeah, they've realised that something's not right there between NIWA and the Met Service, and maybe the merger's just right. Right timing. And so what other nice... Well, yeah, we've got people in New Zealand talking about the Fonterra Prophet. How obscene was that?
Gosh, Don.
That doesn't help build a Dunedin hospital, does it?
No, nothing. No. Absolutely nothing to do there.
Just those farmers pocket the lot. They don't filter it through themselves. It just stays with them, and they what do? Do they buy gold bars with it and stack them away, or what do they do? Or do they reinvest in their community with this money that's come from the white liquid?
White gold.
What do they do with it?
Who would know? But maybe Timaru could tell us after this week just gone. And I don't know who you know, among our listeners, who's really up to date with what the milk price has done. But 2013, 2014, I think, because that was pre my daughter's birth, the milk payout at one time was about $8.50. So the last time it reached this sort of number, $9, which they're talking of now, was over a decade ago. What has the farm inflation, the interest cost, the wages bill, the fertilizer cost, the fuel cost, the compliance, the red tape, the consenting, what have all of those costs done in the last 10 years?
Massively expanded.
Dairy NZ's calculator says that for the average farmer, the break-even price is a few cents above $8. There'll be those for whom it'll be less, and there'll be those who are, you know, highly leveraged for whom it'll be higher thanks to the interest costs.
Yep.
To think that this is open season again to start bashing farmers, gosh, I you know, the tall poppy syndrome is alive and well.
Oh, the standard one is, well, the price of milk hasn't gone down in the supermarkets and cheese is through the roof and all that. Well, that's what happens when you put all these other regimes in place, that you do have to have some added cost recovery. Doesn't happen entirely. I mean, if we could recover all the added costs by government and local government and sheet them home to that litre of milk, I venture to say that litre of milk would be double or triple what you're paying now. But because New Zealand milk is priced on an international regime, really, you're not getting all those added costs put onto the cost of milk inside your supermarket. So it's a vexed issue. But I remember telling you the story, Jaspreet, that 1980, when I planted 20 hectares of trees, a hectare of tree was likely to be worth about $40,000 if it was fully pruned at that time. $40,000. Now that's about all you get still, 45 years later. So commodity trading is not for the faint-hearted. And if you add all these other costs in that you can't recover, slowly but surely you kill the golden goose. And that's that's effectively what's happened to the sheep meat industry, by the way. It's a very, very sound product. And everyone says, oh, it's so expensive in the supermarket. Well, clearly it's not expensive enough, because most sheep and beef farmers are breaking even at best in the last couple of years. It can't keep going on. And I remember when I had my best year ever was 2000 or 2001. My cost of production for a lamb was $26. And for some reason that year, I struck it right. My average return was $78. So there was, what, $54 gross profit. Come 2007, worst year in 50 for sheep and beef farming in New Zealand, my return was $54 a lamb, and my cost of production, sorry, my return was $55 and my cost of production was $54. So I made $1 a lamb gross profit 7 years later.
That's enough to kill anyone's spirit, but to keep on at it, doing it again. That's what the average farmer does, and that's what Dawn and I try to impress upon our listeners. Mm. Because, looking at the mainstream media, we are all supposedly creaming it. Now, we just have a few minutes here before we go on to our next guest, and I'll try to emphasize what's been signed up last week as part of the United Nations General Assembly and the Summit of the Future Health. as a part of that particular annual gig, the Pact for the Future has been signed. And you can go to the UN website and look for it. You can find it there easily. But along with that pact, it's got two annexures, a global digital compact and a declaration for a future for the future generations. They have roughly just shy of 60, 56, 58, some such action points. But the key action, action number one, speaks of accelerating steps towards universal and far-reaching 2030 agenda while achieving sustainable development goals, the SDGs, and leaving no one behind. And the next one is action four, dedicated to financing SDGs and how to close the gap. And, you know, Don and I just spoke about the bill, and the bill might be getting bigger at COP29. This is where all of this is happening. But if you read through that document, you know, it's 60-odd pages of these 58 action points. Some of the stuff there is, frankly, absurd. Absurd. Provide universal, gender-sensitive, gender-focused internet access. And I was like, what does gender-focused internet access mean? What, how Dawn accesses the internet and how I access the internet is no different. But there it is, all sorts of nonsense, 60-odd pages. And what one of the urgent measures that the Global Digital Compact that's attached to it falls under this category that they call information integrity. And the United Nations wants social media platforms to provide researchers with the access to data with the obligatory mention, of course, of some sort of hazy, obscure safeguards for user privacy. This is beyond a joke. All what is happening is right now they are panicking about the fact that the SDGs are not where they were. They've gotten 4,000 odd delegates, national representatives, ministers, prime ministers, our deputy PM, all of them going there. And they seem to yet again promise us the world, this paradise of unicorns and everything nice and happy and singing. If you look at the track record of UN, we should not be giving them a cent. They are unelected, they are unaccountable, and they are unwanted. And yet here they are. And we have leaders across the world kowtowing to them.
And I asked last week, who was the New Zealand representatives there? Well, we clearly know the minister, the deputy prime minister was there. You found an article last week that showed that the formative drafts of that Pact for the Future had Nanaia Mahuta as the lead player there. Now, I don't get how it's this partisan agreement can happen. You know, we went from a left-wing government, probably the most left-wing government New Zealand's ever had, and I've labelled it worse than that. I'll just be cautious. And we went to a coalition. Surely there should have been some revision of what New Zealand agreed to for that pact text. Not that New Zealand will have got its way entirely, but the emphasis that the former minister Mahuta would have put into that would have been obscene. You know, one of the architects of the UNDRIP stuff, the Hei Puapua stuff. I have no trust as to what went in there, and I have no feeling that it was changed.
None whatsoever. And I just, the sheer wastage. I know for a fact none of what this is being promised there is what it seems. But we still are dignifying it every year, sending millions of, dollars, tens of millions of dollars. And this is without including all the NGOs and others pushing the SDGs in our schools, the Ministry of Education, talking about the UN, books on all of this. Where does this stop? When do we say, actually, we need a hospital at Dunedin?
Yeah, I don't disagree. And of course, I've got this view that they're scurrying for their survival for these SDGs. They're struggling for what they term multilateralism. And I used to go around the world doing free trade talks on multilateral agreements. I thought that was the best way to go. Still sort of do. But we don't need to have all these rules and regulations tagged onto these free trade agreements. And so what is the next threat for them? It's multi-stakeholderism. And trying to define that just in a few minutes here, it would be very difficult. But the corporates are clearly wanting to have their say in a bigger way through the United Nations.
Definitely.
And that's the next game in town. So what is it? What do you believe coming out of the United Nations? Dunno. Anyway, look, time to move to our next guest. And that is the ACT MP, Mark Cameron. He's back in the house talking about all things rural. There's a few issues to face, but we won't cover them all. There's so many, but he's a real authentic representative for rural New Zealand in the Parliament, and we thank him for his input today. He's up next.
Thanks for joining us this morning, 2057, if you want to text us.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.